You know, after your military experience, your balloon jumps, balloons have stayed with you as a subject of passion. And you made an incredible crossing of the Atlantic Ocean in 1984 in a balloon. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, when I was in solitary confinement in Hanoi, I dreamed and planned about flying a balloon around the world. That was my mental gymnastics. Some people designed houses. Some people did mathematical formulas. I entertained myself by dreaming how to fly around the world in a balloon. And one of the training flights was to fly across the Atlantic. That was my first flight, fly across the Atlantic. So when I got back in 1973, I started working on making a flight across the Atlantic Ocean. But it took me 11 years to get a sponsor. And finally, in September the 14th, I took off from Caribou, Maine, and I flew the Atlantic Ocean solo. I wanted to do it solo because it was kind of a hazardous event, and I didn't want to risk anybody else's life for an adventure, because all the other balloon flights I'd made was done for science and for a scientific reason. Flying the Atlantic was just for the fun of it. It was an adventure. Nobody had ever done it before, and that was what it was. It was just a big adventure.
Why a balloon? Why have balloons stayed with you so much?
Well, so I'd already flown across the Atlantic Ocean in an airplane. Lindbergh did that in 1927. But nobody had ever done it solo in a balloon. So it was a challenge. It was somebody had never done it before. I wanted to do it.
Is there anything particular about balloons that fascinate you?
Well, I love all forms of aviation. It's just another way, the means of flying. I like all forms of aviation. But balloon flying is a lot of fun.
Is it relaxing?
It can be. It depends upon the situation that you're in. It's just a lot of fun. I flew hot air balloons. As a matter of fact, my wife and I, Sherry, we had 6 balloons here in Orlando that we sold champagne balloon flights all around the community. And there's a lot of people right here in Orlando that flew with me on those flights, champagne balloon flights. But this was a gas balloon, completely different than a hot air balloon. And I flew for 3.5 days, and I landed in Italy and set 6 world records. It'll be there for a long, long time because it was a very small balloon. I went a long ways. Went 3,500 miles in 86 hours and landed in Italy. And when I landed, my wife was there with a bottle of champagne that we drank in celebration of the flight.
What do you think about these records that you've set, Joe Kittinger? You've set many records, and they're still standing. Do you look back on those with pride, or are you excited for the next person who might try to break them?
Both. All the records that I made in the parachute jump were made by a team. We had a great team of people that worked together with the same goal that I had. And a lot of those records were made by my name's on the record, but they were made by a team. The flight across the Atlantic Ocean, I had a great team that helped me get there. Sherry, my wife, Bob Snow, my meteorologist, sponsors. I was just a lucky guy that has my name on the records. And records are meant to be broken. And but I have about 8 records still in the records books that I set during my career.
You know, when you were making those scientific balloon flights, much of that was worked into the space program. And at the time, you had made some comments about the potential for balloons in high-altitude research. And right now that the shuttle program is ending, NASA's looking to commercial space companies to take astronauts and experiments and other things up into space. Do you think that balloons could come back? Could they be used more in research? Or do you think they could be cheaper, better than other modes of transit when you look at space?
Balloons, high-altitude balloons have a great capability to provide very inexpensive research. And I think that now that the space program is drawing down from NASA, that they could get the most money for their buck by using high-altitude research from balloons. And I hope that it'll be a rejuvenation of research for balloons. I made the last scientific balloon flight ever made in 1962. I took an astronomer with a telescope up to 87,000 feet. That was the last manned scientific balloon flight ever made in 1962. I think now is the time for it to bring them back and do a lot of research you could do in balloons.
Why do you think people turned away from balloons?
Well, because rockets had a higher lobbying group. It was more exciting to fly around in the space. Balloons are low orbit. You know, they're 100,000, 125,000 feet, not in space. There's still some pressure there at 120,000 feet. But it's an area that, that balloons could do make a great contribution again in conducting research.
With your connection to the space program, have you been following the shuttle as it has been winding down and now is actually over?
Oh, yes. I was very fortunate that I was there for the first shuttle launch. John Young, he and I went to Princeton, by the way, together, Princeton Elementary, that is. And he invited me to the first launch 30 years ago. So I've been watching it for 30 years.
Did you watch the last one?
On television. I went the second before the last, Sherry and I went over there and watched that shuttle launch.
What are your thoughts on the shuttle program ending and the way things have been left now with the gap in U.S. abilities to get its own crew to International Space Station or into low Earth orbit for that matter?
Well, I think we should have started working a long time ago on going to Mars with a band. We first went to the moon in 1969, and that's 32 years ago, and we haven't been back to the moon because we devoted all of our energies and all of our resources to the space shuttle. I think maybe the space shuttle should have ended 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, and put our emphases on going to Mars with a man. So I think it's sad that it's over, but everything has to end at some time, and I think let's press on and go to the next chapter. Now, what's happened, interesting enough, is that private industry is now doing research in space. The SpaceX, Richard Branson taking people in suborbital flights, Red Bull sponsoring a high-altitude research jump. Now the private industry is taking over research that the government used to do always. So it's an interesting transition that's going on now.
You mentioned that Red Bull flight. You're involved with that. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I've been involved for the last 3 years with a program that's called Red Bull Stratus Project. It's a program to go to the next generation pressure suit and test that pressure suit. It's a pressure suit that will be used for the next generation astronauts. And this program has been taking 3 years to do. We just completed a almost 8-month delay in the program because of a frivolous lawsuit that was settled 2 weeks ago out of court. And now we're back in business again, and we could probably do two jumps this year, one from 60,000, one from 90,000, and then probably the first of next year we'll make a jump from 125,000 feet. It'll be a very rich program for research, for space research. We have a dedicated team on the program. We have an astronaut doctor in charge of the medical aspects. We have a great team of professionals that are working to get the jumper, whose name is Felix Baumgartner, from Austria, up and down in a safe manner. It's going to be an exciting program, and it has a website called www.redbullstratus.com that everybody can follow it. And he's going to have cameras on him, and he's going to be able to watch him as he's falling. The public's going to be able to be part of that jump. There's been a great improvement in communications and cameras since I made the jump. And the way this is going to be documented, it's going to be something that you're going to be able to sit in your room, your television, and watch him jump from 125,000 feet. It's going to be an exciting, exciting event.
Do you have any desire at all to maybe go back up and do a big jump like that?
I've already done it. I'm to the point now where I'm helping somebody else do it.
No desire to be oldest jumper or anything like that.
If I could get a pressure suit on, I would try it. I would not hesitate because I know I have confidence that it could be done because I've did it myself already, and I know I could do it from 125,000 feet.
you know, 50 years after your jump, people are still fascinated about this. People still want to hear the story of that jump. Why do you think it's still got so much gravitas?
Well, it's been 51 years. Nobody's beaten it. So obviously it's not an easy thing to do. The pictures that were made were interesting. For a record to last 51 years, it's amazing when you think about it. But it's not an easy task to do, requiring an elaborate team, a lot of expense and time to get it done properly and safely.
You know, today we're almost in an age of information saturation. So much is known about the Earth and its environments. Where do you see the next frontiers for this new century?
Go to Mars with a man. To me, that's going to be the great 21st century adventure. Let's go to Mars. First planet. Man, first man on a planet. It's going to be a challenge.
Do you think, though, is there still a sense of there being a need for an age of exploration? In the 1960s, so many barriers were broken, especially in aviation, you know, starting in the late 40s all the way through. So many tremendous barriers were shattered in aviation. Do you think, are there still those kind of amazing barriers that people are still kind of drooling over, thinking about, you know, trying to break?
Let me tell you what, in the last 20 years, the two great records that have been broken. The first record was that every aviator wanted to be the first man to fly solo around the world. That was a great plum that was out there, a great adventure to be the first man to fly solo around the world. And that was done by Steve Fawcett. And then there was also, for the balloonists, there was a great goal to be the first man to fly solo around the world in a balloon. And that was done by Steve Fawcett. So the two great aeronautical plums that were out there are now gone. No one can ever say, again, I could be the first man to fly solo around the world. There are less challenges, but there's just as many future challenges that will come up, I'm sure.
Now, in Orlando, a downtown park was rededicated in your honor this spring, and it's right over near the Orlando Executive Airport. What does that park mean to you, and why is that location appropriate, do you think?
Gosh, I'm glad you asked me that question. When I was a young boy, I used to ride my bicycle from College Park to Herndon Airfield, Orlando Air Force Base, and watch airplanes and dream. It was my field of dreams. I'd ride my bicycle out there and dream about being an aviator, being a fighter pilot. And I would help airplanes, help people put fuel in the airplanes and sit and dream about flying airplanes. When I got out of the Air Force and came back to Orlando, I went back out to Orlando Executive Airport, and it had grown up around there. There was no place that a boy or a girl could go and look at airplanes and watch them land. So a friend of mine named Clanky Hargrove, he and I got together one day and we said, you know, we need a place where kids can watch airplanes. And there's no place. So we went to the Airport Authority and we went to the city of Orlando and we worked for about 6 months to come up with a location where kids could watch airplanes land. And we finally found one. Little did I know that they were going to name the park after me, but we wanted a place. So there is a place now where kids can go and do what I did when I was a young boy, watch airplanes land and take off and dream about being an aviator. So I'm delighted that the park is there. I'm delighted that they named it after me. And for the people in Central Florida, they now have a place where they can go and watch airplanes and hear the conversation between the airplanes and the tower and be a part of aviation. So to me, I'm delighted that park is named after me, and I'm delighted it's there.
What do you like most about watching an airplane fly? Is it the rush of the jet engine or seeing it as it lifts off into the sky? What do you like most?
Well, I put myself in the airplane. Every airplane I see land, I say, well, I evaluate the landing.
You're critiquing
what I would have done differently. And so I ended up being part of it. And that's the field of dreams. That when you dream about something, it can happen. And that's the reason why that's such an important park.
Well, Joe Kittinger, it has been a pleasure to talk with you. He's a retired Air Force colonel who holds the record for the highest parachute jump. He lives here in the Orlando area. Joe, thank you so much for coming in and talking with me.
Before we leave, I must promote my book.
Please. Oh, you're absolutely right.
I have written a book called Come Up and Get Me, and this book talks about my growing up in Orlando, St. John River, all of my research programs I did, my time as a POW. It's a book about my life, and it's available on Amazon.com. And I'm very proud of the book. It was written with a fellow by the name of Craig Ryan, and my good friend Neil Armstrong wrote the foreword to the book. So I'm very proud of the book, and I think that everybody would enjoy reading it. I hope they do.
Joe, thanks for coming and sharing those stories.
Mark, I must tell you that you've really done your homework. I always enjoy working with professionals. And frequently, when I have interviews, people have not done the homework. And I really appreciate the fact that you have. And that means an awful lot to a person like me that gets to be interviewed, that the guy thought enough of the opportunity to do the research. You did that. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Joe.